Happy Friday out there. It is September 5th, 2025. Welcome in to the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am your host, Gabe Kuhn, on @G_Kuhn71. I'm alongside the executive producer of the Gabe Kuhn Show. That'd be Connor Dunning on @CDunning99. Connor, how's it going, brother?
It's going great. It's just in a few hours, I'm going to be seeing Speaker Girl live at Java Cabana, 7 p.m. free show. Come on out.
Playing Midtown, the new stuff?
Playing the new stuff.
Shout out. I got tagged on Instagram by Speaker Girl over the weekend. I feel big time.
You did. You've made it. We've made it. Yeah. We've made it. I also love that we have a Zapruder film already in the NFL after one game.
Right.
Maybe the most insane opening 60 seconds of a game I can remember.
Yeah.
We had a horrific injury.
Sharing spit.
Spitgate. It was nuts.
Yeah, it was. And we're going to talk about it as the Eagles win 24-20. In the opener of the NFL season. We have 3 hours to talk, though, on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. We'll have a trip around the NFL at 4:30. We'll get you ready for the weekend. A lot of sort of injury reports and designations being made public. We will discuss those. The Lions also made a signing that I really like. The Lions made a signing right here on the eve of the season that I really, really appreciate. As far as guests are concerned, 5 o'clock, David Cobb will join the show. 5:30, Lee Sterling will join the show. To get you some picks for the weekend, college football week 2, and we'll have some NFL from him. And then Jonah Dillon at 6 o'clock. And Jonah was on hand last night, Connor. I don't know if you knew this was going on. I'm sure you did. But Memphis women's soccer versus Tennessee, number 2 versus number 14 in the country. Ended in a 0-0 tie. Broke records over at South Campus, 2,218 attendees. Now, I don't know how they got that number. Because I'm not sure they have, like, a ticket counter. Somebody would have had to go out there and count the entire
Some
game.
Some student intern had to go out there and count.
And it was also an interesting scene in the fact that, like, the stands are being renovated right now. So it basically sort of had that high school Friday Night Lights football feeling where you have a bunch of people just standing on the track next to the field while the game's going on. But 0-0 against the number 2 team in the country, they're still undefeated.
They're great. Well done. Yeah, well done, best, Memphis Tigers women's soccer.
Best program on campus, to be completely honest.
Probably, yes.
Yeah. To be able to do that as consistently as they do, it's pretty impressive. But on top of Jonah Dillon, we're going to have the Blitz at 6:30. So that is the show for you. Last night, we opened the NFL season. Eagles on ring night face off against the Cowboys. We'll stay away from the final score and breaking down the game for at least a second because what an unbelievable start to the season. First 10 minutes of the game, Dak spits in Jalen Carter's direction and says, yeah. Jalen Carter retaliates, spits directly on him. While there's an injury timeout for a season-ending injury, Jalen Carter is ejected. The first 4 drives of the game finish in touchdowns, and there was 2 brawls within the first 2 quarters. What a start! That's the type of energy we need to get the NFL season kicked off, isn't it, Connor?
You also have 2 teams that straight up hate each other. Just hate each other. It was everything you could have possibly wanted with the start of the NFL. And on top of it, the cherry on top of all of that, is a Memphis Tiger had an amazing game as well, and Jake Elliott.
Yep, 58-yarder. He was 1 for 7 last year from 50-plus, and he nailed that. Looks like he's having a nice rebound year.
We love to see it. It's because he's on my fantasy team, 100%.
Yeah, so you got 5 points for that. How about it?
Good for you.
Now, I do want to break down the Dak Jalen Carter situation really quick. A lot of people calling for suspensions for Jalen Carter for having spat on Dak Prescott. If you do rewind the tape, it was a retaliatory measure to a certain extent. Was it stupid? Absolutely. Yes. But Dak Prescott absolutely egged it on. While the injury timeout was taking place, he steps in between his offensive linemen, looks at Jalen Carter in his eyes, and spits at his feet before saying, yeah. He was provoking Jalen Carter. Now, Jalen Carter has to take it upon himself to not be provoked. Right? It seemed pretty easy to provoke Jalen Carter to do something monumentally stupid. but he walks over to Dak Prescott and spits directly in his chest. He gets ejected. So, in turn, basically suspended for a game. I'm going to ask you, Connor, because being a former football player, I've seen this happen, and I've seen no suspensions from it. I haven't even seen in-house stuff done because of it. This one was very public, though. A lot of the ones that I've seen in the past in my playing days were kept under wraps. Nobody noticed them. But do you think he needs to face, Jalen Carter, that is, D-tackle for the Philadelphia Eagles, should he face more suspension on top of the game he got last night?
I think he should be fined. I don't know if he should be suspended. Because it happened so early in the game, he essentially got a one-game suspension because of the spit. And I think suspending him again, especially now that we have video evidence of it being a retaliation, I think would be a little heavy-handed by the NFL to suspend him for another game. He was out the entire game. I think you fine him, make sure that there is an example made. I think that Dak deserves some sort of punishment as well. But for another game suspension, I think would be a little much for Jalen Carter.
Yes, I'm generally with you. I just look at the situation, and the idea behind suspending him is let's make an example out of him. We're big on sportsmanship because sportsmanship was one of the big points of emphasis for referees going into the year. But making, quote-unquote, making an example of him, what example are you exactly making? Don't spit in somebody's face?
Everyone got ejected immediately.
Everyone knows not to spit in an opponent's face or on an opponent in general. And Dak Prescott needs to know that as well. Don't spit in their direction either. But to all the people that are saying suspend him for multiple games to make an example out of him, I don't really know what example you're making. Everyone knows not to do what Jalen Carter did last night. Just because he does not get a punishment further from the game that he got last night, he was out the entire game, didn't play a single snap, just because you punish him further does not mean that people will take it as an open invitation to start spitting on opponents. You know what I mean? Like, I don't really get that argument. Now, if you're making the argument that since Jalen Carter has come into the league, he's had a perpetual sort of problem with his emotions getting the best of him. Personal fouls, flagrant plays, hitting people while they're down, you know, just doing a little bit too much, giving a little bit extra. I can hear that argument as well, but also you're going to have to show me the statistics that go along with him being a repeat offender because I don't necessarily see them as apparent as other people see them, him being a quote-unquote dirty player. I personally think the game that he got last night, he was out the entire game, didn't play a snap. I think that's enough. But we'll see what the NFL decides to do. Now, if I'm asking you yes or no, do they suspend him further, what do you think the answer to that is?
I think it's no. If it happened mid-game and he had played some of it, I think you could see another suspension. But because it happened at the very beginning of the game, he had no impact, he wasn't playing at all, I think that they'll probably look at it as a one-game suspension. And I'm pretty much with you. What extra example can you make then if you spit, you immediately get ejected? Like that, there.
But we know that.
We know that. Like that's why I think
I'm pretty sure that's written in the rule book.
That's why it's
one of the examples in the rule book of what not to do.
If there's not another game suspension, make sure that there is a fine implemented. And that seems punishment enough to me. It'd basically be a one-game suspension with a fine. And then, again, I think that Dak deserves some sort of fine, or
yeah.
If they want to suspend Dak for a game, I think that would be above board because he did spit on Jalen Carter, and Dak's explanation is ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous what he tried to say. Well, my guy was standing there and I had to spit. One, don't spit. Two, turn your
head. You spit directly while looking him in the eyes at his feet and then said, yeah, right after it.
We literally have a Zapruder film. We have the footage from the grassy knoll. It was back and to the left.
Right.
What are you talking about?
We know what happened, Dak. You can't tell your own story in this situation. You just can't. Now, to the game, Eagles win 24-20. And my biggest takeaway from this game is, hey, Cowboys may have traded Micah Parsons. They may have some bad vibes going on in that locker room. But like we talked about yesterday, as long as Dak's healthy, it's going to be a fine, solid team that can compete for a wild card.
They'll be good as long as Dak's healthy. They'll be good.
And my other takeaway is, contrary to a lot of Cowboys losses we've watched in the past, you can't put that one on Dak Prescott in the slightest. I thought he played unbelievably well. Was he as efficient as he needed to be? No, but you give some of that to the Eagles. He was 21 for 34 for 188, didn't turn the ball over, also didn't throw a touchdown pass. But when I watch back that third and fourth quarter, he was putting guys in great situations and doing all he could to make the throws to win the game. The one over the middle to Jake Ferguson in the end zone, where Jake Ferguson got hit pretty hard, there was a penalty, that should have been caught. Two, in particular, to CeeDee Lamb, even though he had four drops, two to CeeDee Lamb just stick out like crazy. There was a conversion attempt, about an eight-yard throw, just hits directly off of his hands. And then there was one that could have set them up to potentially go take a lead in the fourth quarter. Dak drops it into a bucket between safeties converging, and CeeDee Lamb just has scissor hands with it and can't catch the ball. And Dak, I don't know what else he could have done to truthfully give his team a better chance to win. He placed the ball where it needed to be placed, didn't turn the ball over, didn't take unnecessary sacks, didn't get sacked the entire game. I thought he played a wonderful game, and his supporting cast failed him for the most part. That's the way I view it. Now, this is something that, contrary to popular belief, does show up a fair amount with CeeDee Lamb. CeeDee Lamb had four drops last night. I think that was probably the biggest difference in the game. And CeeDee Lamb, since he came into the league in 2020, 35 drops. That's the most of any wide receiver in the National Football League. So that's something he has to take upon himself to be better at throughout the rest of the season. But this is a strange day to come in here after a Cowboys loss and basically say everybody but Dak Prescott was the problem.
Yeah, it's one of those games where you can tell who watched it and who didn't. Because if somebody has the take of, well, Dak wasn't very good in that game, you hit them back with, well, you must not have been watching, because he made some beautiful throws and his receivers simply dropped the balls. They didn't make the plays when they needed to. And that is why the Cowboys lost that game. There were multiple times where they would have been put in scoring position if his receivers just held onto the football, and they didn't. I think that the defense of the Cowboys played pretty well, holding the Eagles to only 24 points. They were in a position to win the game, and ultimately, CeeDee Lamb and the receivers did not make the plays when they needed to.
Yep, there's just no doubt
about
it.
What did you make of the defense without Micah?
I will say it was fine. It was fine. I thought they stuck in there and limited Saquon Barkley as much as they could. He only had 3.3 yards per carry. They struggled in pass rush.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. Like, there's only one sack on Jalen Hurts. Micah Parsons
Hurts
there.
Was amazing
you feel a lot,
last
you
night.
You feel a lot different about that. But Jalen Hurts extended plays, used his legs in a big way. Multiple third down conversions, two rushing touchdowns.
It was incredible.
That's the biggest issue I had with the Dallas Cowboys last night, which sort of brings us full circle. I thought they stopped the run relatively well with Micah Parsons now in Green Bay. But they didn't get after the passer, or they couldn't get Jalen Hurts on the ground as well as they would have had Micah Parsons been in the fold.
I mean, he was 19 for 23, 152, 62 rushing yards, two touchdowns.
Yeah, and his rushing yards came in very crucial moments. Third and threes, third and fours, third and sevens, where he just broke contain and found a way to go get the first down before sliding and not taking a hit. Like, that's the issue I had with the Dallas Cowboys defense, although I thought they played relatively well. I think my biggest surprise for the Cowboys, I'll get to my big surprise for the Eagles here in a second. They ran the ball pretty well.
Yeah.
Offensive line, move guys. They got to some of their zone schemes. It worked really well. Miles Sanders, he had the one big 49-yard run, but besides that, I need to see his vision get a little bit better. But Javonte Williams got some tough yards when they needed them. 15 carries, 54 yards, two touchdowns. They didn't have a single game last year where a running back scored two touchdowns. They didn't have two rushing touchdowns in the same game last year. They did that in week one of this year. So it looks like the run game, even though they don't have those big name backs, even though they have a young offensive line, it looks like there's a bit of a resurgence coming for the Dallas Cowboys. But you could also read into the fact that the Eagles didn't have their primary interior defender in Jalen Carter and had to play Jordan Davis for 50 snaps, and he's not near as good as Jalen Carter. So you could read into that as well. But it did look like the bones of a decent rushing offense was there for the Dallas Cowboys.
Did the game last night change your opinion on the season outlook for either team?
Not really. I've never been in on the Cowboys. But I do think, as long as Dak stays healthy,
they're good.
9-10 win team.
I feel like we have maintained for a while.
So, like, I it didn't really change my opinion on them. And then for the Eagles, you have to win close games.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get everybody's best shot. It's a rivalry game. It was chippy. Both teams won it really badly. Winning by four, I don't dock them in any way, shape, or form. I thought Jalen Hurts played well. My big issue there for them, though, is passing game. You have to target A.J. Brown. He had one target. One target, one catch, 8 yards. You have to find a way to get him involved in the game plan. You pay him a lot of money for it, but also he's one of your best playmakers on offense. Use him.
Yeah, I do feel like we've always maintained on the show, Dak Prescott doesn't get enough credit for how good he actually is when he's out there for the Cowboys and when he's healthy. When he's out there, they are usually competitive, and that's why when we were talking about the game, we were previewing it, we both thought that it would be a closer game than people expected because we thought that the offense of the Cowboys was at least going to be able to keep up with the Eagles, and that's what they were able to do last night. I do think that the Cowboys' defense played much better than I was expecting them to, but to your point, not having Micah Parsons, I think, allowed Jalen Hurts to have more time to make decisions and be efficient with the football. Jalen Hurts' decision-making is yes. Why I think he's a top-five quarterback in the NFL, and why I have said that for the last few years. He does not make mistakes. He's not going to do anything stupid. He's going to run when he needs to. He's going to throw the ball when he needs to, and he makes decisions very quickly. And that's why I just thought it was a brilliant game by Jalen Hurts last night. I know his stats aren't popping off. He didn't have a passing touchdown. He needs to target A.J. Brown more. I agree with that. It's just last night, though, if you're an Eagles fan, that's the type of football game. That is why you have a championship with Jalen Hurts, is that he just takes care of the football. He knows how to run this offense.
Makes the right decisions.
Makes the right decisions. And that tush-push, still lethal. Now, yep. I do want to ask you, there have been a lot of conversations about how the Eagles are lining up in the tush-push. What do you think of that? What do you make of that?
Well, clarify exactly what people are saying. I need a little help there.
That they're offsides when they're lining up. That they aren't in the correct position. The center's over the football. He's a little bit in front of it.
He's in a four-point stance.
Is it nitpicky?
I think it's nitpicky. I think people just
they're saying they're in the neutral zone.
People don't like the tush push. They're going to try to find ways to attack it how they see fit. If the NFL starts penalizing the center for being over the ball, we can have a different conversation. But I don't expect that to happen. I think this is just continued sour grapes. We need to just stop the war on the damn tush push. I know it's successful. I know they convert it every time, but that's because they practice it and they put an emphasis on it. You can do the same thing, right? And also, our buddy, Braden Fajoco, put out a YouTube video about how you can stop the tush push. I suggest people go to YouTube, type in Braden Fajoco, and check that out. It has to do with submarining defensive linemen and having linebackers right in there to stop them. There's a way to do it. You just have to emphasize it in practice the same way they emphasize the tush push. I don't know why everyone, every time we see it, every week of the season, when they convert get a touchdown or convert a third down or a fourth down using the tush push, we have to have a conversation about it every time, about how it's not a football play and everything else. It's a football play. It's bare bones football.
You would think that people would figure out how to defend it at this point. Now, did they do it? They do it every single game. And I don't know. I saw a lot of people talking about how they were lining up in an illegal formation. And I was just curious to see what your thoughts were on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Unless they have too many guys on the line, I'm going to stay out of it. I don't, you know, my feelings on the tush push, you know, my feelings on the people who have negative feelings toward the tush push. I'll stay out of this one for now. Now, going into the weekend, Tiger football takes on Georgia State. It'll be 6 o'clock ESPN+. It'll be at Georgia State. Memphis opens as 13.5-point favorites. Now, that's interesting to me. Georgia State lost 63-7 week one to Ole Miss. Their quarterback situation didn't look great. Their offense in general didn't look great. This feels like, considering what Georgia State is or looks like right now, seems like a small number to me for Memphis. I know they're on the road, but it feels like this game, if you're just looking at it on face value, feels like Memphis should probably be, I don't know, three touchdown favorite or more. Now, you start to break down some of the reasons that may be the case, and you look at Georgia State's side. That Ole Miss game and that final score, a little bit deceiving. Not too deceiving, a little bit deceiving. The second half, they took off on Georgia State. Georgia State couldn't hold on to the rope long enough. But it was 7-0 after one quarter, 17-7 with, I believe, 4 or 5 minutes left in the first half. In the first 10 to 15 plays, Georgia State's secondary had 2 interceptions. So there's some talent there with Georgia State. It's just about how long can they last against opponents that seem to have more talented players than them. And I think that Memphis fits that bill. They have more talented players than Georgia State.
Yeah, I expect Memphis to take care of business in this game. I think that if they don't cover, it would be a huge disappointment. They should be winning by 2 touchdowns or more at minimum in this football game. I understand that Georgia State, that some people think that they had a pretty good showing against Ole Miss, and that final score can be deceiving because they absolutely took off against them. They had an okay, you know, the first half, they're in it. Good for you guys. But then you go and you look at their stats and you're like, yeah, oh, this was an ass kicking. Yeah, yeah, it's like, yeah. That's why I've seen some people try to make that argument of like, well, Georgia State.
Look at the first quarter.
Yeah, but they're like, their quarterback had 54 yards the entire game. What are we talking about here?
They played 2 quarterbacks, actually.
Well, I guess their top quarterback had 54 yards.
This stat line, their starter was 4-for-11, 52 yards, a touchdown, an INT. The backup that came in, I don't even know how you get this stat line. 8-for-14, 8 completions, 17 yards. How is that? It's a 1.4.
A lot of just
yard per reception.
Halfback screens.
How do you do that? That's just now route after now route. They don't trust him to throw the ball 4 yards downfield.
That's crazy.
8-for-14, 17 yards. But there is a catch here. They have a new guy on campus, TJ Finley.
Yes, they do.
And T.J. Finley, he was at Western Kentucky last year, didn't work out. Injuries, got replaced, yada, yada, yada. 2 years ago, though, at Texas State, very, very good ball player. I think they won right around 9 games, 24 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. Now, T.J. Finley is not a guy who's going to throw you for a loop with his legs necessarily. He's decently athletic, but he's a big-bodied guy with a live arm. That's what you have to pay attention to. And I think that throws this Memphis coaching staff and defense for a little bit of a loop. A guy with a lot of experience, no matter how long he's been on that Georgia State campus, a guy with a lot of experience that may be thrown in there as a surprise, and you don't have film of him in a Georgia State uniform, that's a challenge in itself that you have to try to overcome. Again, I don't know how much T.J. Finley will play. He hasn't been on campus.
Right.
It's hard to pick up a playbook that quickly. But if he does, that's some cause for concern because he's a talented quarterback, way more talented than what they have on the roster.
Do you think that might be why the line is what it is? Is because there is that question of T.J. Finley. Is he going to play in this football game?
It's possible. It's possible. And I also think that this line looks this way. If we're being honest, Ryan doesn't cover. his teams don't really cover. I know Jeffrey Wright probably has all the statistics for him. They covered last week 27.5 against Chattanooga, but they generally don't cover against FBS opponents, especially on the road. So I think that may be why the line's a little bit smaller. But I do think the TJ Finley thing has something to do with it. Right. But it's gonna be interesting to watch. Offensively, Tigers need to show what they showed against Chattanooga against an FBS opponent. That's what I'm hoping. Run the ball, take care of the football, get Brendan Lewis's legs involved, get him in a rhythm throwing the ball with some short routes, intermediate things. They only took one real deep shot against Chattanooga, and it was dropped by Bryce Dorsey on that deep skinny post. So I want to see them open it up a little bit more. And we talked to Ryan yesterday. Ryan said, you know, there is at times, most of the staffs he's been a part of, when you play an FCS opponent that seems to be inferior to you for the most part. I don't think he wouldn't use those words. But you tend to try to be a little bit more vanilla. And then the game plays out the way it does. You score, get up early, and then you just get more vanilla because you don't have to open up the playbook. So I would expect this week to open it up a little bit more and try to see what Brendan Lewis can do with his arm.
It feels like if C.J. Smith can actually give it a go, they'll be able to open it up a little bit more, especially downfield. But again, Ryan said that he'll travel, but he is still questionable. And I don't know if we're going to see them. I have some hope, but I would be surprised.
This team's still just such a big mystery to me.
Yeah.
Just because, like, there's two ways to look at it. Because last week, 10 guys had targets and receptions, pass catchers. They played 8 different D linemen. Secondary, I can't even tell you how many different guys they played. I mean, it was just rotating as many guys as possible. So you look at that and you say, okay, Ryan has said he likes the depth on this team. But is that an ode to the depth of the team, or are they still in the evaluation process seeing who their guys are? I would lean to the second part, saying they're still in the evaluation process by playing that many.
I was going to say, is saying that you're a fan of your depth also a way of saying, I don't love our starters?
Yeah, that's a good point, right? Like, I don't know yet. I don't know yet. I think we learn a little bit more this week, a little bit more next week.
Got to know by September 20th.
Then September 20th is the real test against Arkansas at home. So we'll see. We'll see. All right, now we need to, even though we have one game down in week one of the NFL, we have to take a trip around the National Football League, give you some injury designations, some signings. All that's next, 92.9 FM ESPN. Back in on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. It's time to take a trip around the National Football League as week one is underway. All right, so former Lions defensive end Za'Darius Smith is signing a 1-year deal with the Philadelphia Eagles. Za'Darius Smith had 9 sacks last season with the Lions and has 69 career sacks that he will bring to Philadelphia. And this seems like a massive signing to me. A very experienced, proven pass rusher that can give you some good work on third downs. Do I think he'll play every snap? No, I don't think that. At this point in his career, it just doesn't seem like a realistic possibility. But between him, Nolan Smith, Moro Ojomo, I think they're trying to get together a nice pass rushing group. Last night, 0 sacks on Dak. I don't know if that'll hold through the rest of the season, but this is certainly a helper piece for the Philadelphia Eagles. We'll see how quickly he gets involved. All right, so Dak Prescott gave his recounting of the situation. I know we covered it to a certain extent already, but he gave his recounting of the situation with one Jalen Carter. And, Connor, before I really get into it, can I say I didn't really like his approach? Is that fair?
It was dumb as hell.
I really didn't like his approach. But he basically said, this is a quote, I probably spit 1,000 times throughout the game. And he said he wasn't aiming for Jalen Carter. Dak said, Carter said, you trying to spit on me. Dak said, what would I need to spit on you for? And then Jalen spit on him. No denying that that was probably the exchange. The first part is what I will deny. There's video, Dak. You're saying I probably spit 1,000 times. I wasn't even trying to spit towards him or at him. You looked him in his eyes. You spit at his feet. And if that wasn't enough, you gave him a provocative, yeah. I mean, it's pretty open and shut how this was initiated. And Dak, you are the instigator. I want you to take some level of accountability because I saw the guy who responded and got kicked out of the game, Jalen Carter, last night, take full responsibility. That was dumb of me. I'm mad I couldn't be out there for my teammates. Stupid. Won't happen again. Dak, on the other hand, trying to wipe his hands clean when we have full-on video of it, that bothers the hell out of me. I did not like that at all, Connor.
I thought it was silly. I thought his explanation was silly. Just own up to it. Say you did it. Take the fine. They're probably just going to fine you. They should fine Jalen Carter. They should fine Dak Prescott. And then we'll move on from this whole situation.
But I spit 1,000 times throughout the game.
I was trying not to hit my guys.
I wasn't trying to provoke Jalen Carter in any way, shape, or form. Shut up.
I just spit directly at him and was looking him in the eyes. But it was not intentional at all. I did not give Kawhi Leonard $50 million.
So the Chargers and the Chiefs play on YouTube tonight. It'll be in Brazil. And I got this from Adam Schefter, and this stat amazed me. Just to show how close the Chargers-Chiefs in-division rivalry is, yet how far away it is. Heading into tonight's game in Brazil, Patrick Mahomes and Justin Herbert have faced off eight times in the National Football League. In 6 of those 8 matchups, there was a lead change in the final minute or overtime. Take a guess what Patrick Mahomes' record is in those 8 games, 6 of which had a lead change in the fourth quarter overtime. 7-1.
Woo!
I think, I don't want to blame it all on Justin Herbert, no doubt. It highlights a championship team versus a team that's just trying to make the playoffs by hook or by crook. But also, I'd be lying, even though I'm a Justin Herbert fan, if I said it doesn't show a difference between Patrick Mahomes being able to come through in the clutch and Justin Herbert's ability to come through in the clutch. I think there's a story there about both quarterbacks as well. When Justin Herbert has been asked, which he's been asked on multiple occasions to go win a game for his club, he does it 50% of the time. Patrick Mahomes, on the other hand, 11 for 11 last year in one score game.
That's insane.
So I think that the story is, truthfully, when you get into those close games, what's the quarterback doing to ultimately get you over the top? Patrick Mahomes is eons better than Justin Herbert at this point in both of their careers. Nothing to see here, but Malik Nabers has a back issue. He was held out of practice today, but he is still on track to play coming up on Sunday. That's the news. Just giving it to you. Mostly for your fantasy lineups,
to be clear. Let me tell you. When that notification came through
I'm sure you got nervous.
Malik Nabers questionable. I was like, excuse me?
I mean, this is a first-round pick.
Opened up Twitter
and
searched Malik Nabers. And when I saw he's still going to play, we're just holding him out, I was like, okay, I feel better.
But it may make you feel different about how well he can actually play. Is he going to be at 100%? But
just give me hope.
But back issue, held out of practice today, he's going to play. Different story here altogether. Christian McCaffrey. Why? Why now? For real. Why now? If this was something that was going to happen, at least let it happen with like a week to spare, right? For Christian McCaffrey's case, so he could rehab and then potentially be ready for week one. But Christian McCaffrey went from a full practice participant on Wednesday to being limited on Thursday and did not practice today due to a calf injury, a recurring calf injury.
I've heard this story before.
McCaffrey is considered questionable for Sunday's game versus the Seahawks. Right now, worst possible time for this to happen for the 49ers. Never a good time with Christian McCaffrey to go down or potentially be out of a game. But think about the 49ers and their skill position players going into week one if Christian McCaffrey's not there. George Kittle is by himself looking around. Will Smith meme, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air meme. That's what that is for George Kittle. Because then around him, it's Ricky Pearsall. DeMarcus Robinson suspended, so he won't be there. Russell Gage may be there. I don't know. But they have no real weapons outside of George Kittle if Christian McCaffrey isn't able to suit up. And how do they scheme around that? How do they make Brock Purdy, their $53 million quarterback, successful if Christian McCaffrey is holding out, not going to be able to play week one? I don't know. And we know Brandon Ayuk's not coming back until at least week six. I know the 49ers have always had real issues with injuries, but to start the year like this, just brutal. Absolutely brutal.
They have Brian Robinson Jr., though.
Yeah, they do.
That's it. That is correct. They do have him. Yes.
He is someone who exists on their roster. that is true.
No faith in MVS. None.
Wow.
Juwan Jennings.
Juwan Jennings. Sure. I think he's mad with the franchise right now, and he's had some injuries through camp.
Sky Moore resurgence.
Sky Moore resurgence. When was the surgeons? Why are we doing re? He never even took off. So I no. And the Brian Robinson thing, it's funny. He's a solid player. He's been around.
But he's no Christian McCaffrey.
He's been around 1,000 yards rushing. But like, truthfully, the fall off from Christian McCaffrey to Brian Robinson Jr., that's I'm just gonna say it as it's substantial, and that's not even putting it the right way. It's a large difference. Large fall off from Christian McCaffrey to Brian Robinson Jr. Micah Parsons, we have an update. Listed as questionable with a back injury on Sunday versus the Lions. I want to see him go in week one if he can. Now, if I'm the Packers, I pick and choose my spots with Micah Parsons coming up on Sunday. Third downs, things like that. I don't need him playing every single defensive snap like he did with the Cowboys through his first 4 years. I don't think that would do anybody any good, especially with him not participating in training camp. You don't want to have soft tissue problems to pop up. He's already got the back issue, so you have to be careful with that. But I would like to see him get a little bit of run with the Packers, get used to his surroundings, see him in a Packer uniform. I think that would do everybody a lot of good, seeing him in his new threads. But I hope they don't try to overuse him early in the season, but I don't imagine they will. They don't necessarily need him to win games. He's more of a luxury piece. So I would get him on a ramp up, and then, I don't know, week two, week three, maybe you have him ready to go and he can play just about every single defensive snap. But for right now, week one, I would limit your expectations. Final thing here, Christian Gonzalez, cornerback, young, really good cornerback for the New England Patriots, has been ruled out with a hamstring injury against the Raiders. Also, Will Campbell, starting left tackle, first-round pick, is questionable with an ankle injury. I feel very good about the Patriots. Not good to have these type of injuries pop up in week one. But I don't think there's anything long-term with Christian Gonzalez. Don't think there's anything long-term with Will Campbell. Still am pretty bullish on that being my final wild card team in the AFC.
The Patriots.
Yeah, I'm still pretty bullish on it. But these two injuries could affect them week one against the sort of new-look Raiders.
What type of season are you expecting out of Drake May?
17 games. Let's see. Well, start all 17 games. That would be nice. Above 20 touchdowns. Limit your interceptions to about 10 or under. And throw for 3,500 yards. I think that's sort of my expectation for him. Last year, limited action, didn't play the entire season, 15 touchdowns, 10 interceptions, right around 2,000 yards. Like, I think he is more than capable of reaching the numbers that I just said. And I think if he does reach those numbers, with what we know about Mike Vrabel's defenses and what we know about Mike Vrabel and how he likes to control games, run the football, I feel like that's perfect, a perfect stat line for them to be a playoff team going into going into the end of the year.
Two more questions about the Patriots for you. Do you think that Diggs is actually going to be a difference maker this season for them? And do you think that Henderson will eventually take that RB1 spot?
He has to be. And one thing
he has to be a difference maker.
Yes. Stephon Diggs has to be. Because outside of him, you're not really working with all that much. And I do think what's nice about Stephon Diggs, As long as you remove the diva mask and all of the pink substances.
The bags.
The pink substances this offseason when he was dating Cardi B, which I think they're broken up now, right?
I have no idea.
I believe they're broken up. I couldn't tell you. One thing about him as a player is he is a target eater. And for a young quarterback, I like that. I like to have someone who, no matter what, I can throw the ball their way and they're comfortable with winning those 50-50 balls. Like, I need that guy out there for me. I think Stephon Diggs can provide that for Drake May. Has he lost a step? Sure. Is he going to be okay coming off injury? I think that's a fair question. But I think to this point in his career, we've learned there's a baseline of Stephon Diggs that is pretty high. Like, the floor is pretty high for Stephon Diggs.
So Cardi B 2 days ago had this to say about boyfriend Diggs. I love him today. So it seems like they're still together.
Wait, that's the quote?
That's the quote.
I love him today.
Today.
So tomorrow's, it's not guaranteed. But I thought they were broken up. I thought they had something going on.
I have no idea.
And what was your other question? You had one more question.
Henderson.
Oh, Travion Henderson? Guy's first touch in preseason's 101-yard kick return. Like, he's listed as third on the running back depth chart. Something tells me, logic tells me, that Mike Vrabel's doing his gamesmanship thing where he's not trying to show his hand, and then coming up on Sunday against the Raiders, he will run him 25 times. Like, that's what's in my head, but they do – the other two backs they have are pretty talented.
I was going to say –
so there's going to be a share.
The Pats kind of have a sneaky, great running back room.
Ramondre Stevenson is tough runner in between the tackles, not much of a pass catcher. Then you have Antonio Gibson, who is – okay, not necessarily in between the tackles. He can do that. He has done that. That's not what you want to do with him. More of the pass-catching back, spell back on third downs. But the reason I'm a buyer into Travion Henderson is because he takes both of their skill sets, meshes it into one, and that's who he is as a player. Now, it's a rookie season, so, like, how much of the playbook do you know? How comfortable are they with his knowledge of the playbook? He seems like a study guy. He seems like a film guy. He played really well in the preseason, so I don't know how much of a concern that is. But it just feels like as the season wears along, Travion Henderson will take more and more of the lion's share of the targets and the carries. Because Mike Vrabel, when he had success, we remember what his offense looked like. It was run zone and then play action with Ryan Tannehill. But he ran zone with the same running back a million times a game. Now, I understand Travion Henderson and Derrick Henry are not built the same, but the point I'm trying to make is Mike Vrabel likes a lead back. That's what he wants to have. Control of the game, consistent running back in there, a consistent presence, and I think Travion Henderson eventually will take over that role. But I think to start the year, you go with veteran leadership, veterans that have been there before, and then once you get some good film, good outcomes from Travion Henderson, I think he'll start to take over. But he's thought of highly in fantasy circles, Connor. I will say that.
He certainly is. Certainly is.
I mean, I saw his projection for this week. Oh, he's on my team. 14 points per game. Or 14 points is his projection this week against the Raiders. And he's listed as the third string running back. I don't know if that really adds
up. Who's your matchup this week?
Jason.
Oh, you better win.
Well, I started Dak Prescott. So that didn't work.
You better win. I think Jessica and I are going to have a bloodbath. It's going to be close.
I think she's going to kick your ass. I'm setting the line at -7.5, 8.5. I'm setting it at 8.5.
Well, thanks, Gabe. We're in an alliance.
That's what friends are for, Connor.
We're in an alliance on this show.
That's what friends are for, brother. Well, and also, it's like she beat me in the championship game last year.
So you're rooting for her?
If you beat her... No. I don't really care who
wins.
She
was a different team last year.
Yeah.
I'm just saying you better be Jason because...
Jason's roster is hilarious.
I know
that fantasy football talk on the air, talking about your own fantasy football team can be ridiculous, but Jason's is... Love Jason to death. It may work out for him. 5 rookies and 3 second-year players. Like, I can't get over his roster. He bucked every – like, ESPN has their projections, And it's like, okay, this is the next guy in line. We expect him to do big things. And Jason would like scroll three pages down to pick his guy. I mean, it was funny watching him draft.
Championships sometimes are built on risk taking in fantasy football.
And of course he had to get Caleb Williams.
Of course he did.
Yeah.
I don't know. It might work out for him. I'm curious to see how his team performs this weekend. Because we can definitely make final proclamations from week one.
It could work out for him. But a lot of it is hinging on
where he was drafting, going high risk, high reward. I don't blame him at all. Because he was in a tough draft spot.
Yeah. I was in one too, though. I mean, come on. Where was he?
He was second to last.
Oh, okay,
I think he was 11th.
That's not easy.
That's tough.
I hear that. All right, now let's go ahead and grab a break on that note. Hour number two will start next. We'll break down the week two college football matchups, including that top 25 matchup between Michigan and Oklahoma, with David Cobb on the other side, 92.9 FM ESPN.